This is Average Advice. I'm Zar.
And I'm Tim. Average guys, average stories, average advice.
Welcome to season two, where new and exciting things are on the way.
Stay tuned and stay average.
You think we overpromised?
Nah.
Hey, Timmy. Hey, Zar. Welcome back to Average Advice, everyone. You're here with Tim and Zar and our guest for today, Brett. Welcome, Brett.
Hey, man. You going, guys? Welcome to the show.
We decided to bring Brett on. I've had some...
Friend from Capital,
yeah,
right?
My mate from Capital Pathology. Worked at TGA for a bit before he moved away. Moved to Albury, right? Albury?
Wodonga, technically, but you know, they're the same place. Same place.
Wodonga. Yeah.
Isn't it Albury Wodonga? Or are they two?
Well, one's New South Wales, one's Victoria. It's on the Victorian side.
Yeah. I decided to bring Brett on because Brett asked about the show and asked about whether he could debate Tim or something along those lines. Oh, or he wanted Yaz to debate you or someone to debate someone.
Everyone wants to debate Tim. I have I have a lot of opinions that usually.
Enjoy the Yaz episode where Yaz and you had some back and forth. I enjoyed that quite a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, in season one. Yeah, Yaz hasn't come on for a while, has she?
No, she has not.
Zar's sick, so you might hear a lozzy suckle.
Yeah. Yeah, I got the sore throat.
This is why it's even more better that it's virtual, so I don't have to catch your sickness.
But yes.
Oh, and a cough.
We used to work at Capital Pathology together. Brett was in the courier team. I was in specimen reception. So they're the ones that give us the samples and go, hey, take this off our hands. And we go, yep, no worries. I think it was Brett's first or second week. And I think I was the senior path aide at the time. And Brett comes up, he goes, so what do I call you? Like, meaning, what's your name, obviously. But I just went literal and went, you can call me handsome.
Yes, you did.
And I think...
It all makes
sense. For a few weeks there, you didn't actually know my name. You were just calling me handsome.
Well, I asked you what your name was and you said handsome. So I just went with handsome and I gave everyone else nicknames. And you're the only one that called your own.
No. You didn't ask what my name is. You said, what do I call you?
What
I said,
what's your title, good sir?
You call me handsome.
And I did exactly as you asked.
That's all.
So
you did. You're a good little courier.
Which is, that's better because most of the time when I say that to people, they just slap me in the face. You're like, no, fuck you. See? Must be good to have your genes, you piece of shit, Zariel.
You can thank my parents for that.
But we got no hair, but we got a better personality. So that's fine, Tim. Don't worry about it.
Oh. Well, we don't have to point that out to everyone. Everyone already knows.
So you were living in Canberra before you moved to
Wodonga? Yeah, I was in Canberra my whole life until I moved down here, bought a house down in Wodonga. In the last year, I moved.
Why'd you move? What'd you move for? Just to get out of Canberra?
Just lifestyle. Been in Canberra my entire life. We sort of wanted to move somewhere a bit smaller. Also can afford property here, which is kind of nice. And I had a mate down here. My old man was originally from this area, so it was kind of nice to just get out and try something new.
Home. No, I'm the same. I think there's two types of people in Canberra. I've said it multiple times on this podcast. It's just like you either stay there until you die or you get out of there.
Yeah, I got out later than most people. Everyone else I know already got out or is staying forever. Mm. And I decided we were late to do it, but we went, no, we'll get out. And if we end up back there one day, it wouldn't be the worst thing. Don't hate Canberra. It's been our home. Like, we grew up, we're not just public servant people. We were both, me and my wife were there forever. So we were Tuggeranong people though. We were the south side. So we were very south side.
What I hated about growing up in Canberra was it's like, so everyone expects you to join the government. Like even when you're going through school and stuff, like you're doing all these jobs and stuff. You're like, everyone always looks like, oh, why are you doing this? You know, you're going to be in the government. And you're like, I hated it so much when I was growing up that I refused to join the government for like
years. Yeah, I was a bit the same.
Years. I was like, nah. And then I was like, oh man, I'm just saying no.
There's a reason why people do it. Yeah. No, we went away with my wife for a friend's birthday. She was down in Melbourne and we said we're from Canberra, and this girl, without even asking the next question, was, what department are you guys in? And I was just like, no, not doing that. No, neither one of us is actually. Yeah,
that's a good one.
So
I work for
Brett and I worked closer together at Capital Pathology, and then right before he left, he was working over at the TGA, and then actually he left, it was following me.
Wait, did you go to the TGA first?
Yeah. But after Brett left, his team actually joined Yaz's team, like in the same section. So he would have been like working closely alongside like us again. It was just like, Canberra is way too small.
Can't get rid of you.
Yeah, I was basically... Well,
it was like when you got me the job. You know, you got
I was basically over hanging out with Yaz and him whenever I could anyway, because they stuffed up our job anyway and had no work. So I was like, what are you guys doing? I just wander over. And I'm like, oh, Yaz, are you on the phone? Okay, you're going to do some actual work? Okay, I'll leave you alone.
Oh, you're actually working? Why the fuck are you doing that? That's so dumb. It was like when you got me the job at Grilled Czar, and like then we got Worrell the job at Grilled too. But then it was also like my girlfriend was working at Grilled. Your girlfriend was working at Grilled. And I'm just like, everyone that we knew for like a specific like span of that like year was just all Grilled. It blew my mind. And then when we brought Worrell over, because we worked with him at Jelmo, it was just like this weird vibe, because it's like you're used to working with someone, but it's just completely new environment. So
Yeah. And I think that's it. I think
we've done that a lot.
Friends, jobs, and all that stuff. And then Canberra, you're always just like working proximity.
He didn't get me the job. He was upset when I turned up. He was like, fuck, he's here as well. Jesus.
I drove
him out. Are we dropping F-bombs or should just curve that a little bit?
You can fucking drop whatever fucking bombs you want,
mate. Just check it. Yeah. Just check it how better you want it. That's fine.
Oh, yeah, dude. Fucking drop all the fucking bombs.
So, Brett and I...
We swear too often to put that stipulation on this podcast.
Brett and I had an interesting bond, because on Monday nights, we used to do the late night shift together at Capital.
What time does that finish?
Well, late night's like 8:30 p.m. It's not like...
It's open-ended, depending on how much bad stuff
Some of the chem scientists will do like overnight shifts, so they've got to have someone in the lab doing like hospital. Wow. Like if someone's at the hospital and they've got to get their bloods taken, they're about to do surgery or something, they need someone at the lab testing that. So
someone has to be there.
Yeah. 24.
But is it 24/7?
It's 24/7, but after 8:30 p.m., it's only hospitals, so it's like very few specimens come in, and they literally
skeleton.
I think literally the scientist goes and picks it up from the hospital, brings it back, and blah blah blah. Anyway.
That'd be such a weird
Monday job. Night at 8:30 was Brett and I were always on the last shift of the night, and every week we're just like, is someone going to fuck up something again? Are we going to have to stay late? Like someone's gone wrong.
Yes, they are.
Like, and I swear it was like three quarters of the time something fucking went wrong. And it was like that one.
What kind of mistakes are we talking about? Like,
okay.
Talk to me like I've never worked at pathology.
Well, Brett, the people that made the mistakes may as well have never worked there. They were as dumb as, we're talking some basic mistakes that me and Czar had to fix up just because we were only ones left. So, yeah.
Is it like labeling mistakes or labeling of specimen?
You got the collection centers in Canberra where you go and you get your bloods taken or you pee into the cup or whatever you want to do, right? And Brett's team, the couriers, do like rounds of Canberra. They have like different areas of Canberra. They pick up from the collection centers and doctors' clinics and whatnot. And
picking up all the
stuff. When the collectors do a test, they do a test and they collect it. It goes into the system before it actually reaches the lab, so we can like track what's been done before it reaches the lab. So at the end of the night, my team has to like check the list to see if we've received everything that was entered that day, and if something was left behind, the last courier of the night would have to do an extra run out to that like collection center or something like that.
Getting flashbacks. And
I swear every other night, and then it'd be like, oh no, there's nothing wrong. Every Monday night, me and Brett, it's just like they must have weekend fade over. Like
they knew Brett needed to get his driving hours.
Yeah, up. I didn't get enough driving. Like, that was the issue. Just
leave it for Brett.
Needs more driving. Yeah,
as a courier. Who needs more? Who doesn't need more?
Yeah, usually that day I'd go to Goulburn to start, then come back, then have a break, then do all of Western Creek, then start doing hospitals at 6. And then if I saw Czar or it was a Monday, and in both I was stuffed. So if Czar was on, it was a Monday. We're guaranteed we're doing like late night. Someone forgot something, forgot an Esky. or something. I had to go into a dark room and sometimes I hadn't even been to that place in like ages. Like, oh, there's this random place out in Whoop Whoop. Can you go and get Ainsley or what? Not even Ainsley. Gungahlin was the worst one. But that was fun.
So like the labs in Deakin, and like if someone had left something in like a Gungahlin or Belconnen, that's like a 20-25 minute drive to get there. So it's almost an hour of me just waiting at the lab for Brett to go and pick it up. I should have just come with you on the drive, I reckon.
Yeah, you weren't doing much else after that. So you may as well have,
Just dogged him, bro.
I know. So I was literally just waiting. I should have just come for a drive. We're going to talk shit in the car. Oh.
When I started working nights, when I was on the service desk, like it was such a weird experience to be in your workplace at like a non-normal time. Like you'd go into the kitchen at like 1 a.m. You'd be like, this is so odd. Why am I here? Especially in the morning when you're leaving, when everyone else is arriving for work and you're just like,
see ya, suckers.
Yeah. It was good though, because you'd see like in the morning, you'd see the calls start to come through and like this huge list started to form.
Like,
you're
like,
see ya. I'm out.
I feel like the pathology hurt even more because I've done bar work like that where you know you're going to be there late, but you usually leave at that time. Whereas we were always, please, please, nothing happen. And then you end up doing another hour and a half or something. And you're like, you're not prepared for it. Whereas at least if you know it's coming, you know your finish time, it's better. But Monday nights, no, we never. I think we got it like twice. Yeah, we're always looking at each other going, what? Nothing happened. You sure? I'm leaving.
Are you positive? Sure you didn't?
He messed with me once and I almost slapped him because he joked that we didn't have anything. And then he comes back and goes, nah, man, we've got to go out to this place. And I went, you're joking, aren't you now? This is now you're joking. No, I was joking the first time.
I thought I did it the other way around.
You may have. Either way, I remember just looking at you like, death, yeah.
So,
Zai wouldn't do a joke that ends on a bad note.
So, like,
like, you do jokes on a good note.
Our mate Sarah, if she's listening, shout out to Sarah, she's a ledge. She was like, you should fuck with Brett. You should just like pretend there's something in Gungahlin and that he has to go and get him. And then as he's about to leave, just go, oh, just kidding. I'm just kidding. And then he gets mad, but then he's like, oh, wait, I'm not mad. Yeah, it's like a relieved mad. It's like, thank you, little shit. I love you.
So this is Sarah Doubleshot. We'll give her a shout out. She was one of the best working there with me, and we had a fun one with her too, where you said, you said the wrong thing and I pointed it out, remember? And you maybe got a little bit awkward for a few weeks there. We sort of insinuated that he'd said something a bit dirty about her being, on her knees. And then I just looked at you and said, what did you just say? And then everyone cracked it at him and he felt like crawling under the desk.
I don't remember what.
And then I remember Yaz started and I said to Yaz, you heard what he said, right? And I knew she had a sense of humor. So she went up to him like, what did you say to Doubleshot? And then he got really red in the face, and then we got to relive the laughter again. Because, I've never seen Yaz go that. Never seen Yaz enjoy something so much, and see Handsome get so red in the face so many times. It was good.
What did you say?
There was another time I said one. It wasn't like that bad, but it was like it sounded racist without me meaning to be racist. There was,
dude.
Oh, you're doing the classic. I'm not racist, but here we go.
There was a girl that used to work with us. She was Indian, and one day she was wearing like her outfit was just all brown, like it was just all different shit. And I'm just like, oh, you're looking very brown today. And after I said it, I was like,
I've got something similar.
You
barely
said anything you meant.
Not long ago. So not long ago, like this is actually only like a couple of weeks ago, I went to like a barbecue and we're all just chilling. We're all just having drinks, right? And I was making a comment before anything else happened. I was like, man, because everyone around the circle were just pale as fuck. Like we're just all looking at how pale we are. We're like, man, this is too pale in this fucking, no one can get a tan here. And then two of our friends that are incredibly tanned came in. And then my drunken ass said, instead of saying, man, you guys are too tan to be in here, this is the pale club, it came out was, sorry, you guys aren't white. And immediately, as soon as I said that, I was like, wait,
you're that's like, not what I meant.
Yeah, you can't look like you look and say shit like
that's
that.
Not what I meant.
No.
It's just like you can't recover from that. Luckily, they took it as a joke. But now, like whenever I see them, they're like, "Hey, my racist man, what's going on?" I'm like, "Fuck."
Oh, dude. And it's those moments you just like, you're like, "Why do I say things? Why do I?"
Yeah. It's happened before in our friendship group. Now I'm just the racist person. Everyone just teases me about being racist. I'm like, I'm not racist.
So Brett, everyone, I promise. Do you have friends now in Wodonga? Do you have friends?
I have some friends. I don't know. I haven't asked whether they'd call me friend, but you know, I hang around with some people. I've started playing basketball again down here, and I've started doing some comedy open mics too, which has been pretty crazy. So that was something nice. I wanted to do when I was in Canberra, and I just sort of went around and looked at them all, and then I just decided when I got
you
here
and Tim are
just to do it.
The same person.
Yeah, dude.
Tim.
Yeah, dude. How good is open
mic? Tim, you just got to grow your beard out, wear glasses. You guys would be the same person.
I was going to say, I was just like, see, I do wear glasses. I just can't wear them on the podcast. Can you see a reflection in my eyes? Yep. But no, dude, the comedy scene in Canberra was actually pretty dope. I'm looking around in Sydney at the moment, but it's a lot harder. Surprisingly, yeah. Thought it'd be a lot easier, but they're way more underground.
Yeah, there's a lot in Melbourne, which eventually, once I start, you know, if I get any good, which is probably not going to happen, let's be honest. But there's a lot of Melbourne. There's a lot of guys around here going, we're going to Melbourne and just hit all those places because they've got so many. Whereas here we can go to.
Yeah. Melbourne's
got we've had a couple open up, so now we've got two solid ones that are actually Albury Wodonga, one that's sort of, you know, everything, but sometimes a bit of a hit and miss for comedy. And then there's one in Wagga, which is an hour away, which they come to us and we go to them. So at least there's a little bit of a community that sort of started to do it. Yeah.
What I found hard in the Australian underground comedy scene is that there's not really like. Maybe Sydney and Melbourne. Maybe I don't know about Sydney because obviously I don't know where they are, but Melbourne definitely. But there's not really enough places where you can go and you can go like every day, every week, or like, sorry, every day of the week, where because you want to be able to get up multiple times a week. Otherwise, you're never going to get like really.
Yeah, Melbourne might have it, but you might have to know some people. That's the downside, which is like, the issue.
Yeah, you have to meet the right people. And like Canberra was, because Canberra was so small, it was really easy to meet the people that you needed to talk to get on stage. Where Melbourne is just fucking
heaps. All I'm hearing is how great Canberra is. That's all I'm hearing.
I knew a few of those people. I was just too chicken to actually ask them to do it. I got a few, you know, kind of, you should get up there. And I'm like, yeah, I will. I will eventually. Yeah, I'll do it soon.
That's exactly the same thing that happened to me. I like started going to open mics like with a friend. And then when you go to an open mic and you see all these people bomb, you're like, I can do that. Like I can get
like the mixture that. There's that feeling of I could be funnier than them, but also that feeling of damn, this hurts. Like you're watching them die and you're like, oh, this I want to go under the table and hide, and it's, I don't even know them. So I was thinking like if that's me, what do I've already bombed once, so that I know the feeling now. On my, I think it was my seventh go in Wagga, and I got there all day, I just wasn't feeling it, got up and I was just like a robot, and everyone's looking at me and I'm like, this is bad. Like, I just want to leave right now. Thankfully, I've got up twice since, one in a bad room and one in a good one. So that's made me feel better. But yeah, like you'd have talked to me like 2 weeks ago, I would have been like, nah, I'm not doing that again.
Yeah, there was one time I really bombed. I wasn't even like on the list that night. So I was like, oh, cool. I can just go as like a person that watching the show. So I was having a few beers. And then I was out having a smoke with some of the guys in intermission, and they're like, no, fuck that. We'll get you up. And I was like, oh, fuck. And I was like, I've already mentally prepared to not get up.
Yeah.
So they're like, but I was like, I'm not going to say no to a free spot. So I was like, all right, I'll get up. And the crowd was already pretty touch and go from everyone, even people that were really funny. They didn't really like overtly laugh. So when I got up, I was like, not really prepared. I knew my act, but like I wasn't prepared to get up. I was a little bit drunk. And then I was just rushing through everything, and like I didn't get a single laugh, and it was fucking brutal. It just hurt. It hurt in your soul.
But like, I guess, like, do you learn to like deal with that rejection the more you do it?
You have to. Yeah, you have
even
to.
If you can't never let one joke
get you
down, laugh,
you just gotta keep.
You
moving
just keep and, going, or
and also like it's hard because the minute you start sucking, you go quicker, which is the worst thing you can do. Is if pausing and giving them room to actually like the joke or not like the joke, but if you're going so fast because you're scared and you're running through them, you make it worse anyway. So, and that's what you tend to do. Yeah.
And you'll miss all the other punchlines too, because you'll lose all your timing. It's fucked. Like, it's really, like, you, I think the hardest thing about open mics is just learning to be on stage, like stage presence, being comfortable up there, you know, being loosey goosey. Because a lot of the times when I was going up, you're sort of just trying to get through it. You're like, I want to get off this stage as fast as humanly possible because I am embarrassed. You know what I mean? Where you, like, you want to do it, but you can't get through that anxiety. This is
yeah, and I've been confident twice on stage and the rest has been like my legs start shaking at the start. I'm trying to like get out of control just to like, and then I'm trying to pace it. So I like look like I'm comfortable because I need to give it some time between this joke, but I'm literally like, please just hurry up. Like I've got 5 minutes, but four is enough. Yeah. Four is fine. I'm good. Let's go.
Yeah. I knew that I didn't want to, I didn't want to be up there going, I didn't want to forget what I wanted to say. Like if I had a blank moment in my head, I was like, that's it. I'll just get off stage because I'll end it on a laugh. Or so the first time I went up, it was really good, but my 5 minute set turned into like a 2:50 set because I forgot like four jokes and I was like, I'd rather get off
stage. Yeah, I've had one of them.
But the rest was sort
of. Yeah, I sat down and then I looked at the thing and someone had recorded for me. I said, oh, thanks, man. I don't really want to look at it, but cheers. And I looked at it, it was like 2:40 and I'm like, that's from me walking up and down. I'm like, I really didn't use that 5 minutes, but I was done.
Wow.
No, I just wanted like a couple of good laughs. And then I'm like, all right.
Yeah, they laugh. Let's get off. Yeah.
For a couple of days. Yeah, exactly. Always leave them wanting more, right? Always leave them wanting more. Zah, you should get up on stage, man.
Fuck no. You could do,
why? What's preventing you?
My from own doing fear.
What are you scared of? Since when are you scared of things? Oh,
I've always laughed at your face. I don't want to. Always thought your face was hilarious.
I don't want to go up there and just like, that's what I mean. I get stage fright, you know?
Yeah. It's also very vulnerable, I would say, stand-up comedy, because like you're going up there as yourself, well, I mean, or a persona, but I mean, you're still yourself. And you have to like sort of put your heart on your hands is like, this is what I find funny. And you're just hoping that other people find it funny too. And that's like, that's the shit thing about comedy is because you can write it as much as you want, but unless you get up on stage and do it, you have no idea if what you're writing is funny or not. It might be funny to you, but it could not be funny to anyone else.
Yeah. And that's it. I feel like I want to put in the effort of thinking of jokes and like thinking up and like, I don't know.
It does. It's a lot of, it's weird when you start doing it because for some reason your brain just starts going everywhere. Like as soon as you think of anything, you're like, oh, that could be a funny joke.
Yeah, I'm waking up like as I'm about to go to sleep and I like roll over to like put notes in my phone because I've thought of something and I'm like, I better not forget that because I've thought of a premise that'll be funny. Yeah. And if I don't do that and wake up tomorrow, I'll be like, what was I thinking last night that was funny? Oh, shit, was it? And in my head, I'm thinking, and the problem is I'm probably pumping it up because I've forgotten it. So it's now the funniest thing I've ever thought of. And it's gone forever. So I'm just like, oh, that could have been the best joke ever. You know, like, no, it's usually you look at it again, you're like, this wasn't that good anyway. But, you know, you just need to keep notes in case.
No.
Do you try the jokes on your wife and see if they hit?
Yeah, she's funnier than me. She just won't. She's like you. She won't get on stage. She'd be way funnier than me, but she won't get on stage at all.
But does she laugh at the jokes you come up with?
Most of them, some of them, like, and I'm not too blue. I have a couple where, like, I've got a couple of like a bit morbid jokes, and she's like, "Ooh, I don't know if you should say that." And I'm like, "Nah, that'll get a laugh." Like, I know what, like, but you don't love it. And then there's other ones that are a bit more like in the middle, a bit more not safe, but a bit they're probably going to please more people, and they're not as edgy. And those ones are an easier,
Yeah, my entire act was just self-deprecation, basically. I was just like, let's just insult me for like 5 minutes straight. But there was one joke I slipped in where every single time I did it, it was like a mixed reaction. Because I was just like, asking a white man to go to the beach in summer is like asking Michael J. Fox for an autograph. It doesn't end well. And so you would start hearing some people like laugh from the background, but then they'll be like,
oh. Yeah, that one you need the balls to just like really like sit in it and just wait for that person who didn't want to laugh, and then you give them 3 seconds and they'll start laughing and you're like, yes, I got you and you didn't even laugh.
Yeah.
Like, you're a bad person. You just laughed at that joke about Michael J. Fox and his horrible medical history, you horrible person. Yeah, now I've made you laugh.
I mean, it's funny. The premise is funny.
Oh,
the premise is funny because, unfortunately, Michael J. Fox can't write an autograph.
Well, he can, but it's probably not the same any time. It's always different.
And I feel like when it's comedy, if you're like the kind of person that's going to go to a stand-up comedy show, surely you should find that kind of shit funny. Like, I feel like that's...
You would think that.
But what
you think that. There's a lot of people that come there and they're just like, no, like all the hecklers. There's always hecklers in
everything. They want to go to a comedy show and only listen to really hairy, fairy, like, nice jokes. It's like, no. I mean, half of stand-up comedy, more than that, is probably just like vulgarity and like...
Well, it's always on the edge. The comedy is on the edge of everything because they're like playing with your perception of what you think it should be normal. That's why it's an art form, because just like you're playing with this thing, but like where you shouldn't laugh at it, but because of the way I said it and the way I presented it, makes it funny. So it's like a good comedian can make anything funny. Like a bad comedian can write funny things and read them, but like a good comedian should be able to make anything
funny. No, I agree. I agree. And if people are like going to go to a show and be like, you can't say that. It's like, what do you fucking expect?
Yeah, it's a weird thing to have. So, like, it's like you went to a footy match and then someone kicked a football and you're like, hang on, I didn't sign up for this shit. And I'm like, yeah, you did. Yeah, you walked into a football stadium. Yeah. Like, it's comedy. You walk into comedy. It's the hard ones are the mixed ones. The mixed ones with like open mics that aren't just comedy. Then you've got like bands, then it's hard because the crowd is everything and they might be like, I had no interest in seeing comedy tonight. And you're like, oh, hi, it's an open mic, I'm getting up. Yeah. And they're like, oh, good, can't wait.
That's a real rough room. Yeah. That would be a real rough room to get through. Yeah. But like, I think the bad thing is because people go to comedy and they're like, oh, yeah, I want to go and laugh. And most of the time they will. But then you see the people, because it's just some guy on a stage talking, like people get confused. They're like, oh, this is just a conversation. Like, I can jump in here. Or they think they're funny. So they like want to, like, you know what me and you do? And like when we're talking to each other, we'll jump in over each other and say something funny on top of that. So they think it's a conversation. So they'll do that like they do with their friends. But they're like, hey, motherfucker. I know this sounds like I'm just saying this off the cuff, but I've rehearsed this.
Yeah, I've had a few people when they do the whole, you know, oh, like, who's in from this? Or, you know, we're having a good night. And then after that, this one person thinks that the rest of the night when they say something, it's like, yeah, I'm going to answer everything, like, out loud. And I'm like, no, don't do that. You're going to – and it's not the best, like, especially the higher up you get, certain people are going to just rip you apart for doing it. But it's also, like, they don't want to have their whole time taken up by – saying something to this person. They want to just do what they want to do.
Crowd work. And also, like, a lot of comedians I would find, I know that we just went into a random tangent about comedy, I know a lot of comedians, they like, they want to, they don't want to like have to fucking deal with this people. And like, they on purposely leave spaces and gaps to hold tension and pause. So then these hecklers in the crowd will use those as like, pizzas to jump in, and it completely ruins the joke. And like, I just don't think people realize that unless you actually have written jokes and you know how sort of the like stand-up world works, they're like, fuck.
Yeah, it's hard to know how to navigate if someone, you have one of those people in the audience that just wants to jump in. But I haven't had too many of them so far, and thankfully I haven't said anything. I've had a few people have a chat with someone because they're like wanted to chime in for whatever their joke was. I haven't had that happen to me too much. I did have a fight out on the balcony when I was doing one and literally could just hear like someone like getting thrown into a door.
Wait, you had a
fight? No. I was trying to talk, trying to get my stuff out, and the next thing I knew I just hear the door get smashed like into, and some drunk guy was out there and they were trying to shut the doors so, you know, that people could hear me, and then he's decided he's got to leave. So he tried to walk through a door that wasn't open anymore, and that was kind of a bit distracting.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I bet
That's content gold, though.
Yeah, I was literally saying "fuck" as he hit the door, which was kind of good. Sounded like I was reacting to him, but I was actually just telling a story. I was like, "Oh yeah, you don't fucking do that." I'm like, "Oh, okay." Little look at the door, and then just keep going. Okay.
Well, you see all the clips of hecklers on YouTube, and you're like. Especially the ones that are like a known, like the comedian's known for fucking destroying your life when you heckle. And they still get up and do it. And you're like, do you not know what you're doing? Like, I do this shit for a living, motherfucker. Like,
it's true. No, the best anyway, story I have I had knew a comedian in Canberra who was starting out. And at the time I was doing aged care, which was a great deal of fun. And then I finished doing that, thankfully. But I'd missed his show, and he said, just come past and have a drink with us. And I said, yeah, okay. So I turned up, and I used to work with him years ago, but I'd stayed, you know, in contact. And he obviously hadn't seen a picture of me in like a long time. He'd messaged me and stuff, but he's still got this picture of me from like 8 years ago. And I've turned up, looked him straight in the eye, no recognition, didn't know who I was. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. I'm going to get a beer and then I'll deal with this. So I went back, get a beer, turn around, have my beer. And he walks to the, walking up to the bar to get himself a drink. And I just think, I don't know what came over me. I just thought, I'm going to give him a bump here. We're out in Civic. It'll be funny because I'm bigger than him and I want to see what he does. So I gave him a bump and he's like, oh, sorry, man. I'm like, oh, you think you're funny or something? And he goes, yeah, man, I try my best sort of thing. And I'm like, and I was just like, oh, yeah, man. I was like, and then he's, you could see he's a bit worried. And I just went, hey, man, how you going? And he went, yeah, good, man, you. And I said, imagine me without the glasses and with hair and with no beard. And I just stared down at him and he went, oh, fuck. Hey, man, how are you going? Oh, you scared the shit out of me. And I'm just like, yeah, man, I wasn't going to beat you up. So he bought me a bourbon and then we had a chat. But yes, I scared the absolute crap out of him. And that was his fault for not looking at pictures. So yeah.
I think I would love to just have like a random body transformation and just come back when no one recognizes me. They're like, whoa.
What? Like you want to become, you just want that, you want to become a woman, Tim?
No, maybe not that big of a transition. Maybe not that big of a transformation.
I think that would surprise a few people.
I have a feeling that it could be. I mean, I am camp enough. And I do want more hair.
I did the least effort one. I did the put on 20 kilos, get your eyesight worse, and lose all your hair. Like, that's very easy to do. Yeah, yeah, like, it's not, that's not hard work. Grow a beard, you stop shaving. Like, it's all the things I did to look different were, like, lazy.
Just stop. Just basically stop looking after yourself.
And then no one recognizes you.
And then this is how you end up.
So what are you doing for work now, Brett, over in Wodonga?
Wodonga. So I started doing, I'm looking for more part-time stuff, but I've got, I started doing some MC karaoke stuff, which is interesting, which is different.
Well, just like hosting it for parties and stuff.
Yeah, just started that, which was my first one solo the other night, which was in a country town an hour away and was very interesting sort of dealing with just going and setting up and then having the local bloke at the bar who's 90, turning 90 next year, come up and ask for the same song 15 times before he realizes he's... And then trying to get people up, and it's interesting. Like, it's... And then I had to sing because it was, like, filling gaps, and that's not my thing. I could do the comedy a bit better, but it was like, oh, I'm singing on my own again. Am I, guys? Come on, who's coming up? I'm not here to sing. I'm here to get you up. So, yeah, that was interesting.
What do you think would be funnier, your comedy or you singing?
It'd be more tragic, my singing, but hopefully funnier, my actual comedy when I'm trying to be funny, but it would be pretty... I tried to sing... what did I try to sing? Oh, they put me on the spot and had me sing Tenacious D tribute, and I, you know...
Oh, Tim and I did that karaoke at a bar.
They typecast you, bro.
It was the fourth song, and I'm working. Like, I was helping someone. It was my last training session. And she's like, oh, we're just a bit of initiation here. Put him up. And I'm like, I've never done karaoke without like three beers at least, like probably more. And I was like, well, I can't go get drunk now because I'm working. So I stepped in, did it. And it was, I forgot the gaps in that song and the amount of times I've just got to go. That's hard in front of no one, you know.
Like the thing is with karaoke, you just can't have any shame. What I lack in musical capability, I make up for in pure confidence. So you just belt it out confidently.
You don't have to be able to sing. You just have to be able to pretend you can sing. Exactly.
Yes.
Distract people. So part-time MC. Well, you know, I reckon you'd be all right at that because you're quite a chatty bloke. I feel like you're quite engaging, you know. So
Thanks, man.
Yeah,
charismatic.
This is the most compliments I've ever gotten from Zara. He's called me his mate, which is I've never actually heard before. And he said I'm engaging. This is really nice. This is sweet of you. Thank you. Thank you, Zara.
Yeah. He's got a list of buzzwords he does. He's down
maybe to feel special for a second four. And then take four. It away. Like
you weren't supposed to tell him that, Tim. I was just thinking, like, if I tried to do comedy, I was just thinking just then, like, I feel like I'm better at, like, on the fly, like, when something happens, just like something comes to my brain and trying to be funny, I feel like I would fail at.
That's, I feel like everyone will fail at it until you do it. Like you just need to do it. And that's it. Like, I know that's obviously I'm not telling you to don't do it right now. Cause like, who cares? But you just like, everyone's going to be like, oh, I'm never going to be able to do that until they
if we had to put someone's face here on a poster and sell it, we'd be better off with Zars. It's the problem is he funny? Like, he has a much more, the expressions on his face, good head of hair. Like, there are things we can sell. But if he's just going to get up there and do his awkward red face, we can't really sell any tickets, can we?
What we could do, we could use your face and, like, say that you're the comedy act, you're the headliner, right? Use you in all the marketing and advertisements. But then when you come in, like, everyone comes into the stage, they all line up, you come out, you go up to the microphone, you're about to say something, but then you're completely mute. And then I come out, and he's like, I'm Zar's translator. And then
I'm just doing this one. Like, I just like muted. I'm just miming the words, and you're talking, and it's like perfectly in sync.
Yeah, and then after intermission, like, Brett just comes out at, like, just pretends to that he's the same person
as
me. Yeah.
That's a comedy act.
And if they notice, we'll bring you back, and I'll pretend to be the sign language person on the side, but have no idea what I'm signing.
Just sitting there, just going like this. It's like in Scary Movie 2. You remember that movie?
I have seen it. It was a long time ago, but yeah.
Where she goes into, like, they do the grudge scene, and, like, she goes into the haunted house and she sees the grudge little boy up there, and then, like, they're talking Japanese, but they're just saying Japanese words. Like, they're like, Takaki. Oh, yeah. Like, it's completely sushi. Not sentences.
Yeah. I'd be up there doing baseball ones from the movies where they pull their ear and sort of go like this, and everyone's like, did he just say, it's like, that's what that means, does it? Oh, yeah. It's play call. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's go to a bucket, Zar.
Brett,
how does that sound?
Do you know all about our bucket of mysteries?
Yeah, I listened to you. I listened to a few of the new ones. I got a critique. You've said that Donald Trump is polarizing like Nick Kyrgios, which I thought was an interesting comment, Zar. It's very
well. To be fair, we didn't say that. That was Bruno.
Oh, okay. So he's put Bruno put Trump and Kyrgios in the same.
He's the New Yorker.
Do you not agree that they're both polarizing characters?
Yes, but they're like...
They're both.
One's a sports person who talks too much, and one's like, could have blown up the whole world. So there's like a slight difference.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we were talking to Bruno. Bruno loved Trump.
Point that we were trying to make was that they both spark controversy in the way that the things that they talk about are quite... Like, they're always like... Either this or this. Like, it's like always extreme.
It's like,
they're always like very extreme.
Yeah.
It was like that other tennis guy, like David McEnroe. Like, he was always, no matter everything he said, there was always some sort of debate about it. Like, he said, I remember not long ago, he came out and said that Serena Williams is the best female player ever. And they're like, why can't you just say she's the best male, like, best player? Because, like, and then he's like, because she's not. If she was in the males league, she'd be 200.
Even Serena Williams admits that. Have you seen that video where they're like, oh, you're the best female player ever. Would you want females and males to play together? Like, do you think that would be fair? She's like, hell no. We'd get destroyed. She's like, I'd get destroyed by the top. Like, even like, I wouldn't even be in the top 200 best men in the world. I wouldn't even make that. So.
All right. Yeah. All right. I'll go first. All right. How important is mental health to you, and how do you keep a healthy mind?
Brett?
Oh, first? Okay. I think by doing the things I enjoy, I was like, oh, good question. Doing the things I enjoy has helped me a lot with my mental health and being able to, like, try harder at things that I enjoy versus just getting through the things that I don't like. And quitting Capital Pathology, that was good for my mental health. That was really good for it.
Getting out of any bad environment, like bad work environment.
Yeah, definitely helps after a long period of the time we went through where everyone else is at home pushing buttons and we're out going, we should be fine, but I'm here to pick up stuff. You know, that was interesting.
Yeah, you're literally picking up diseases. Like, oh, we're going in a pandemic, but can I just have
The early part was fun because they're like, do we wear this or this? And they're like, whatever. I'm like, what do you mean whatever? I'm like, oh. Some places you walk in, they're like, everything's normal. Some places you walk in, it looks like you can't, like, they're wearing a mask, gloves, a bloody everything you can imagine. You're like, oh, face shield, and I'm coming in with just a mask. And they're like, what are you doing?
Yeah, the face shields always threw me off in the middle of COVID. And you're like, man, that's some extra protection right there. That's some extra protection. What do I use?
Mental health is definitely important. I mean, there's a reason why it's called mental illness. Like, it's considered a disease, you know, like people commit suicide because of depression and anxiety and whatever else, you know, so taking care of your mental health is close to taking care of your body is, you know, it's the same, you know,
yeah,
your body, physical. Mind, spirit, or whatever that is, it all should be. It sounds a bit hippie, but it all should be, you know, you should try and keep it all up. And I think that, what? you keep trying to interrupt me, Tim. I'm not going to let you.
You go. I never know if you're finished or not.
Can you wait for the comedic pauses, please?
When I used to have anxiety, low self-esteem, and I realized that the way to overcome that is to just face it head on. Maybe I should do comedy. Maybe it's like you got to face your fear head on. Maybe. But like, for instance, I went to a party on the weekend and I think I introduced myself to everyone at the party. I went up, started chatting to them, chatted to everyone, met everyone. And I think back to like when I was 21, I would never have done that. Like, I don't think really? I would have gone and chatted to everyone at the party by myself voluntarily. You know what I mean? I would have maybe gone with a mate, or I would have, if they'd come and talk to me, I would have talked, but I wouldn't just go, I'm going to go talk to them. You know what I mean? And I think that just filtering that out, you know,
I think that's changed as we've grown. Cause I remember obviously when we were together in parties and stuff, we've never had a problem with that, but I was probably the same. If I was in a party where it was like mostly our friends, I would feel much more confident to be able to go and do anything. You know what I mean? I'd go talk to anyone because I knew the majority of people there anyway. Where if, back in the day, if I was at a party where I was in the minority of people, I was way more towing the line of just sort of chatting to people as they came through. But now, if I go to any party, I'm always the loudest person, I think. And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but that's what happens.
And I think for things like depression, sometimes, as you and me are probably both aware, Tim, sometimes people are just depressed and that's just their sort of default state of existence, is they're depressed and they really struggle to get out of it. But I think that, as Brett said, doing things you enjoy, pulling yourselves out of those environments and situations that make you depressed is the first place to start. Surrounding yourself by people that you love, hanging out with people that you like, doing things that you like. I think just doing that all the time, keeping your brain in that sort of mindset. I mean, this is coming from someone who's never had like long-term depression. I have like stages of depression in my life, but I'm always like, it's always due to something. It's not just because I'm depressed, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm the same. Like, I think that I've been depressed, but I've never experienced hardcore depression or anxiety. Like, I've been anxious, but I've never experienced anxiety, if that makes sense. Like, as the illness form of it. But I think it comes down, you were right about everything, except I would say the first step is actually, you know, willingly and wanting to pull yourself out of that. Because the only person that can stop your depression is yourself. Like, obviously, unless you're clinically depressed, that's different. But the only person that can actually pull you out and bring you back up to make things better is you. Like, all your friends around you can be like, hey, yeah, come with us. But unless you're willing to do it,
if they say it like that, I'm not coming with them, though. What? Come with us. That's just a bit confusing to me. Like, that's so probably why I didn't go.
So what do you, Tim? What do you do, Tim, to get out of... To keep your mental health at check.
Exercise is a big thing for me. But like, I don't know. It's not something that I often think about on a daily basis, right? It's not something I'm like, oh, I have to make sure my mental health is in check. It's sort of just something that is an ongoing passive thing where, like, in times where I'm sad or if I'm in times where I feel shit, I will actively seek out things that I know make me feel good. But most of the time, I mean, lately anyway, I haven't really been like super, like in a place where I had to search for something.
And I feel like that's good.
Which is good. Yeah, that's healthy. That's good.
Like, if you don't have to think about it.
If you can, Yeah, 100%. If you're in, because really, like, mental health is one of those things that you only ever think about it if something.
How do you guys? Like, how do you guys deal with stress? Like, if you're just like got a lot going on at work or something, you're just like stressed out. You feel there's a lot going on. Because I'm a bit like that at the moment. I'm not gonna lie. I just feel like there's just a lot going on, and I'm just like, oh. How do you guys deal with that?
Breaking it down to individual tasks helps me. So, like, because I get stressed when I feel clustered or clutter fucked, where I know I have a lot of things on, but I don't know the details of those things. So if I have a lot of stuff on, I'll make sure that I go in. I'm like, all right, in this task to get it done, I need to do this, this, and this. And then you'd be like, all right, well, that task now has four things that I actually have to do that. And then if you do that with everything, you'd be like, well, yeah, I have a lot on, but at least I know what I need to do for those tasks to be completed. That really helps me, especially when it comes to work. In my private life, dude, I'm a fucking mess. Who knows? Who knows what's going on in my life? I'm just sort of just go with the flow. That's me anyway. What about Brett?
I used to drink heavily, but these days usually it's just eat food and hang out with my wife. That usually gets me past the stress so that I can sort of relax a bit. More like, I think, yeah, it used to be a thing of like trying to put yourself out of that headspace into something else. That if it was, you know, me at 21 would be definitely going out and having 30 beers and being like, not think about it. But now it's more processing it a bit better, and yeah, now and then I probably have to eat the wrong thing, but that's a lot much more of an improvement than it was previously, and it's not as bad as it used to be. So
I read something the other day where it was something like most guys, when they're sad or depressed or stressed or anything like that, like they don't really go to or talk to about it with anyone. Like, you know, it's not something that they're like, oh, I need to go talk about this, where they sort of just keep it in. And apparently a lot of guys, even if they have partners or anything, like they just don't talk about anything that's going on like that. So they're like, oh, I'm feeling really stressed today. I was feeling sad today. And they just don't talk about it. Like I just wanted your guys' opinion, because obviously one's married, one has a long-term relationship. Is that the same with you guys, even with a relationship? Do you guys not really talk about that stuff?
No, not at all for me. But I don't know if you relate, Brett, but for me, because I've always been an advocate of sharing if you're feeling upset or you're feeling concerned, talking to someone about it, because sometimes they can give you an opinion or a perspective on the issue that you hadn't thought of that actually helps, or sometimes just them to vent to makes you feel a bit better as well. And I've always done that with my mom, with my mates. So when I've had mates that have been going through a rough time and they don't tell you, and then they suddenly 6 months into their problem, they're like, oh, I'm really upset. Oh, there's other things. Like, dude, I had no idea. Like, why have you not been talking to me? Yeah. Like, I could have helped you. You know what I mean? It's just weird to me. I don't know if you relate, Brett.
Yeah, it's probably something I used to do, but now, no, I just talk about, like, my wife, I can talk to her about anything. It's not really a thing that I get hold it in anymore. It's definitely not something that helps. If you get it out in some way, talking about it's always going to be a better option than holding it in. That's been the problem historically with males in general, with, you know, they'd hold it in until something bad happens and then no one ever knew anything was wrong with them. So that's definitely something that needs to change. Yeah, she'll be right. Up, that sort of stuff. It's always been a bit of a negative thing.
Age old saying. Well, it's weird because it's like, obviously I'm a single man. Like because I bring it up a lot on the podcast.
Oh, okay. Really, sorry. No, I wasn't trying to. But, no, saying, well, me and Zara, with women that are far too good. Because
I'm bald and I've got a beard, man.
So am I. Come on.
I thought all bald people are single.
No, I've gotten.
Finally, I have hope. Thank God. No, but I'm one of those guys that's just like, because I'm very go with the flow. I try not to take anything too seriously. Like, so even if there's things going on in my life that I feel like just stressful or doing things like that, until I actually feel like super sad or super fucked around, I don't really go to anyone. Like, there's not really anyone I'll go talk to about it. Like, if I'm like super, super sad, where like obviously the only time that's really happened is after breakups mostly. Like, I don't really get super, super sad about anything else other than that. And at those times, like, it was lucky because I was down in Canberra, so I had a lot of friends around me. But I mean, I've been single for so long. Like, I don't, that's not really going to be a thing. So I don't know. It's one of those things. Like, sometimes I'll talk to my friends about specific things, but we'll never go super deep on, you know, deep topics. And I'm not sure if that's just a weird guy thing, or is that everyone?
I think.
Who knows?
This is my personal opinion, and you guys can feel free to disagree if you want. But I feel like if you're in a relationship with someone, if you're married to someone in your situation, Brett, you guys are like, you're best friends. And I feel like you need to express your inner feel. Like, you need, if you have a problem, you kind of need to communicate it. Otherwise, it can be difficult. Can be a bit of, I don't know.
The quicker the better, generally, too. The more you hold it in, it's, why didn't you tell me? And then it becomes a thing of, like, you may as well, because if you can't trust that person, then who can you trust? And also, usually, if you're in a bad headspace or you really are sad, if it's, you've gone to the point where you can't get it right in your own head. So, like, some problems you'll have. And like Tim's saying, like, oh, if it gets really bad, I'll talk to friends. And it's like, some things you can cope with yourself. It's like every bad thing that happens to you, I need to tell everyone I know. But like, if it's something you're stuck on and you know your perspective isn't changing and you can't see a good part of it, that's probably when you really do need to talk to someone that you can somewhat trust about it, because otherwise you're only going to see it the bad way, for because you're only seeing your own perspective over and over again.
Yeah. And I think obviously with a couple, I have to stop saying fucking obviously. I keep hearing it and I'm like, God damn it. But with couples, like, you guys should be yin yang. You guys should be able to tell everything. And I think that even if you're sad about something that's not, doesn't even involve your partner, the thing is, when you're sad, you're going to act differently. You're going to be differently. So then they're trying to decipher what's going on with you anyway. So you might as well tell them. Like, I think that's pretty good advice. Good average advice.
Let's go to my one. Scariest moment of your life. Or maybe make it easier, like, if you can narrow it down to like a few. I can talk through mine while you guys think.
Mm-hmm. I think mine and yours might be the same.
So it's probably like the couple of times where I've almost died, I think. It's probably the scariest.
That sounds scary.
Which one?
So there was one time where I was driving to Tim's house with my mate, and it was a bit rainy outside. And he may have gone a little bit too fast and turned a little bit too hard. And the road was wet, obviously. It was right in front of the war memorial down, is it Fairburn and Anzac?
Yep.
Anyway, he like goes through the roundabout to go up towards like Campbell and Duntroon and shit, and starts skidding. And we like skid sideways, hit a pole, like flip over.
Wow.
It was, I mean, we were both fine, but I'm sitting there like,
I saw that car.
What the fuck just happened?
If you weren't in a Mercedes, you'd be dead, like, for sure. Like, the Mercedes, literally, it rolled three times, I'm pretty sure. No, it didn't, like, roll on the roof and then roll back onto its...
It rolled onto its roof, but, like, and then it still momentum had the
same.
Going.
Yeah, it still had the same structure of that. The crumple zone was still 100% intact, and I'm like, that's an impressive building car. I think the scariest moment of my life was when Czar almost died, just because he almost killed me at the same time. But like, because that whole situation was just fucked. So like, I think we've said this on the podcast before, but like briefly, so we're all swimming out. There was like, I think maybe six of us, maybe seven, maybe five, like around that. And we're at this beach, and we didn't want to swim with everyone else. So we're like, let's go around here. So we go over this hump and like, we see this, like sand dude about maybe 20 meters out from the shore. And we're like, all right, we'll all start swimming. And halfway through, one of our friends is like, all right, is everyone a good swimmer? Because I think we're going to go through a rip. Like, it's going to be pretty hard to come back. They're like, yeah, we're all fine. You know, dumb idiots. So we all go out there. We all make it to the thing super easy. It wasn't even hard because we were going through the rip. So we're all there for about maybe 15 minutes. And we're all like, all right, let's swim back. And as we're swimming back, like, I start swimming. Normal, and then I look up and I hadn't moved, and I was like, oh fuck. And I'm like, okay, I sort of started to a little bit panic because I'm like, oh man, like, this is gonna be rough. And I started realizing how hard this is actually gonna be because I'm only halfway through and I'm gassed. And then as this is going through my head and I'm like, oh, I'm fucked, I just hear Czar screaming for help behind me, and I'm the only one close enough to him. So I'm like, oh fuck. So I'm almost dying. Czar is already in panic mode. He thinks he's about to die. I'm about to drown, so I need to get to Tim. And I, when I was a kid, I always used to basically drown, and people used to fucking save me all the time. And the first thing I used to do was just, as soon as, because you're in panic mode, as soon as someone comes near you, you just grab them and you just dunk them under because you're trying to get above the water. And I knew Czar looked like he was going to do that to me because his eyes were like pure white. He was just like terrified. I've never seen Czar so scared before.
It's weird, and that so your comes up, most scariest moment. It's like my most scary moment. Don't you have your own?
It does sound like Czar was in worse nick than you somehow.
Well, this was scary, yeah. Man. This was scary. Like I think scary is watching your friend and you almost die. I think that's scary.
That's true. You can't discount him having empathy.
Damn it.
So like, but what was really scary is when, because like I look up, I realize Czar's there. So Czar comes up, I grab him underneath the arm to like hold him up so he doesn't dunk me. And then I knew that I'm like, there's no way I can get both of us in. No way. And I'm like screaming from our friends. They just made it to shore. And yeah. I'm like, I need you to fucking help me right now. So then three of them come back. And luckily Max is fucking like 6'8". So he could just walk on the bottom of the fucking ocean. And then they pull him back in. Everyone, like, I think Max vomits. It was terrifying.
Embarrassing at the same time. Like, that story. I didn't want to tell that story again, Tim. But
sorry. Oh, I'm sorry, man.
You're like, Tim, that's my story. How can you tell my story?
That's how much I love you. What was that? Sorry.
He's like, Tim, that's my story. That's my story to tell, not yours.
Yeah. Fuck you, Tim. Get your own scary story.
Tell it. That's a scary moment, but. I wasn't going to tell that one.
Why? Well, don't be embarrassed, man. Everyone's almost drowned. I've almost drowned like 6 times in my life.
Brett?
Like, so dumb. There's
a moment for you, Brett.
It's hard to pick one. The one that came to mind was when I was a kid out at a farm my family owned, and then my granddad convincing me the dog was, the old sheepdog was actually lovely and was barking, and went over to the kennel to say hello, and he's taken me up to the kennel and, just as we got right next to it, it's launched at me, and it's on one of those chains that's off the kennels. You know, like they've got a certain weight, you know, distance they can move from the kennel after that they stop. And I've turned to run, and it's bitten me in the back just before the chains pulled it back. And I remember having to like emergency go to a hospital for a tetanus, and I was probably only 7 or 8. I want to say, not very old, not old enough to be. Old enough to be traumatized by a big sheepdog.
Was your granddad laughing?
No, he was traumatized. He felt so bad. He was like, "Oh no, I just fucking lied to your face, and now I've got you bitten." He felt like shit.
Because it would have been funny if you didn't get hurt.
Yeah, yeah. If I was 2 seconds quicker and it just like launched and missed, it would have been like, "Oh, we're laughing about this now." But because I actually had to go to hospital and get like, it was nothing serious, but it was a good little nip out of the back from a grumpy old sheepdog. So it definitely took a little bit of skin and a little bit of this and that. So, he felt like crap. But that in the moment was one of the scariest, because I just remember that turn and running and being like, holy shit.
I remember there was one time me and De Cruz almost got bashed in Queen Bee and Oval. Like, we were coming back from a Halloween party. We were a bit drunk. And I was dressed up as the Joker, like full makeup and everything. I don't know what Sam was dressed up as, but it was like, we're in full makeup, we're walking home. And then like, we just saw this car come past the oval. And as we're walking through, we're like midway through Queen Bee and Oval, and then they park and then like screaming at us. And then there's like 6 of them that come out. They have this big vuvuzela. They're trying to like pretend like it's a bat. And then they kept screaming at us, and I was like, Sam, just keep walking. Sam, keep walking. Kid, just don't stop. Just don't stop. Because, like, I don't want to have this fucking interaction. Because, like, I love Sam, but I don't think he'd be able to fight. You know what I mean? Especially against 6 people. So I'm like, it would basically be me versus 6 people. So we get to the end of Queen Bee, and as they come up, they like, you know, try to make it, get us money and stuff. And I thought it was 100% going to be bashed. But somehow we just can talk our way out of it. And they're just like, all right, just get out of here. That's it. We walked over. I'm like, bro, you have no idea how lucky we fucking
just thought of another one that's not as like scary in that sense, but scary in the like. So when I was in Egypt, when I was 11, when we were at this marketplace, and I got separated from my grandparents and my cousin. Yeah, no, it was only for like 5 minutes, and then I found my granddad, or maybe I can't remember which one I found. I found my granddad or my grandma. But
that's so dangerous.
I was by myself, 11 years old, in like this busy, blustering marketplace in the middle of Egypt. And I basically just stood at a store, and I was just like, talked to the store.
I talked to the store owner.
I was like, I'm lost. And Egypt, all their money's from tourism. So, well, it was back then. So they're good with...
They're good with foreigners. Maybe
someone catches the white boy, we all lose all the money.
Their thought process is, if we return him to the grandparents or the parents, they'll give us money.
Yes.
Saw my granddad walking past after like 5 minutes, but I was just like, I'm going to stay in Egypt for the rest of my life. I've got to become an Egyptian.
I've got to become an Egyptian. I have to learn hieroglyph.
I love that when your 11-year-old brain went, you're going to like get taken and you're like, I must become Egyptian. That will solve it. I'm going to be an Egyptian from now on. Like, what?
No, I was just scared that I'd never see my mom again. That was basically the...
To be fair, I remember when I was a kid, like I got lost in supermarkets all the time because I used to run away, and it would be terrifying. I'd just start crying, and then you have to talk to some random lady. Like, and I used to be such a mama's boy when I was a kid. I used to hold my mom's hand, but I wouldn't pay attention. And I would just look away, and then I would grab random people's hands thinking it's mom's. And mom would just be like standing behind me, just waiting for me to notice. And I'd look up, I'm like, what the fuck? I'd go back to mom. I was such a mama's boy back then. All right, I think that's a good place to leave it.
Well, this whole thing started with me debating Tim, and it's just we've bonded over comedy and got along really well. It's sort of been the opposite of what I promised. So.
See, everyone thinks they don't like me when they hear my voice, but when they
I just promised Princess Mango I'd have a go at you, and she was Chloe on the thing, and she was like, oh, yeah, get Tim. I'm like, oh, well, I'll try. And then we just talked about fun things the entire time. And
Who's Chloe? We had her on the show.
Oh, Chloe, that we had on. Okay, yeah. I love Chloe. I do like her. She was the short one.
Oh, she's definitely short.
Her, yes. She definitely likes you now. She was the short one, right?
I remember the first 20 minutes. First 20 minutes was us just giving her shit about her being short.
Yeah, if you ever forget her name, just poor Chloe. Hey, Shorty. And she's like, what?
The problem is she knows shit. She could probably hurt you quite a lot, but you just don't think she could.
I'm sure she could. A lot of people can, especially being that low. It's very like good, easy hit to the balls, you know?
All right, boys.
Right there.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode.
That's a good place to end.
We love you all, and you know the drill. Stay average, stay sexy, have fun, stay hydrated, all of the things.
Keep it stay.
Stay hydrated.
Adios.
Yeah, good on you.
Bye.